Thanks to Sandy and Linda for bringing us that incredible, one of the most popular hymns in all of the Christmas songs and hymns that we sing, which points us to this holy night that is the center of the story that we celebrate today. It's the Christmas gospel found in Luke chapter 2. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. And he took with him Mary, his fiancée, who was now obviously pregnant. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. And she gave birth to her first child, a son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. It's a Christmas gospel, the good news of Jesus. Our service this morning will...
We interrupt this regularly scheduled Christmas service to bring you a breaking news story from the Weather Center.
I'm meteorologist Jerry Ann Ritter breaking into regular programming because of something we're seeing move into central Iowa. This only happens once a year. We have Chief Meteorologist Ed Wilson in monitoring the situation. Ed, what are you seeing right now and where is it?
Well, Jerry Ann, I had to come in for storm team coverage because I'm so excited. This doesn't happen, of course, like you said, every day. In fact, only once a year. And this is where we started tracking this light, up at the North Pole. Now, it's before Christmas, but you know, Santa has to make some practice runs just to make sure he has everything down, and I think that's what he's doing right now. In fact, we followed him all the way to the East Coast, and now he is flying right into West Des Moines and Lutheran Church of Hope. Santa is on an incoming route, over 400 miles an hour.
Oh, hey, there he is! Hey, boys and girls, it's Santa!
Watch it!
Oh!
Whoa! Oh, my back! Oh, Merry Christmas!
Hey, Santa, are you doing all right? That was quite the crash landing you took right there by the Baptist.
Well, it doesn't always come easy with those reindeer, you know, and I may or may not have been texting Mrs. Claus at the time, but I'm here now.
Santa, everybody knows you shouldn't text and fly a sleigh. You know that, don't you?
That's probably true. But I always want to make sure that I get to a church of worship. So I wanted to make sure that I got here for the candlelight service so I could get a seat. Because really, that's what this is all about. It's about celebrating Jesus today.
Well, I'm surprised, Santa, that you would be here because you have a busy night tonight. But you come and you came here and my goodness, you that's incredible. I'm with somebody as busy as you are that you would make time.
I'm never too busy for this. This is what really matters. After all, it's Jesus' birthday, not my birthday.
Oh man, that's pretty awesome, man. What's that?
I didn't just come here to worship. I wanted to bring you a present. I know you have a couple kids at home, so I got you.
A Hatchimal? Do you know how hard it is? I've been looking everywhere for one of those. It's a Hatchimal. My goodness, Santa. How did you do that?
I'm Santa. You know, elves, toy shop, all that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, starting to hatch. I wonder what's in...
Oh, wow. It is hot in there, you guys. Wait, Pastor Jeremy, are we at Hope?
What? It's Justin, our Power Life guy, and the Hope 360 guy. What, Justin, what are you doing? Shouldn't you be here? You should be home with your family,
yeah,
shouldn't you?
Yeah, I should. I should be at home, but I was a little embarrassed. I was out doing some last-minute Christmas shopping. It's Christmas Eve, after all, and so I was looking for some gifts for my wife, and I was going from store to store, and then I wasn't paying attention. I ran out of gas, and so... pulled out an Uber app, and St. Nicholas showed up. His little helper started shoving me down in this Hatchimal here. Not very helpful, you guys.
You mean, Santa, you're an Uber driver?
It's a great way to meet interesting people, Jeremy.
Hey, I know it's kind of bad timing. It looks like you're in the middle of a service or something. But,
yeah, we kind of are. Yeah.
You got a couple bucks. I'd like to give Jolly Saint Nick a tip for getting me here.
Wait, you want me to give you money so you can give Santa a tip for your Uber ride that you got here?
You know what? Forget it. You're a pastor. You don't have any money. I get it. Santa, you like cookies, right?
Oh, yeah.
We got lots of cookies. I'm going to go grab some cookies, and I'll meet you by the Christmas tree. Thanks for the ride. I'll see you elves later, you guys.
I got to get going, too. I want to go get a seat and get myself a candle. I don't want to miss Silent Night. But I want to say Merry Christmas to you, Jeremy, and thank you for having this service, and thank you for making it all about the most important things. God bless you, Luther Church of Hope. Mind your parents. Say your prayers.
Hey, say hi to Rudolph. Say hi to Mrs. Claus. Thanks for stopping by. Enjoy the service. And our service this morning will continue with our offering. And we say that very carefully here at Hope. We have something here at Hope that we only want people to give out of the cheerfulness of their heart. And if you are a visitor, a first-time visitor with us worshiping this Christmas Eve, feel no obligation to give. This service is our gift back to you. And enjoy as we welcome Matt Baird to come and share his gifts with us this Christmas.
Got room for one more if you still want to go to Aspen.
We got a lot to do. We gotta get to it.
Let's see if I remember how to do this.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right here.
This is it. Tell everyone to hang on. go, no go for long.
Dropping the hammer.
No, you're not.
I can't wait.
I'll show you the most important thing that any living organism has ever witnessed.
You're the champ.
I've been ready for this my whole life.
Just do it.
I'm here now.
It's time. Their time. Up there.
Go, go, go.
Down here, it's our time.
Summer's over. It's time to go home.
That's right. It means it's time to go back home.
It's time.
Let's go, let's go, let's go.
Right here.
Right now.
Right here, right now.
It's time. Daddy, it's time. It's time.
It's time.
Right now.
Don't wait for me.
It's time to go.
It's time.
No time to explain. You must go.
Time to go.
Right now.
It's time.
Mary.
It's almost time, honey.
Joseph. It's time. He's here.
Well, good morning and Merry Christmas. We're so glad that you're here and you're worshiping with us this Christmas Eve. We thought this past year, we looked at what happened Christmas Eve last year, and we thought, you know, maybe we should add a service or two more, and we thought, let's take a shot in the dark, and let's see if anybody would come to worship Christmas Eve as early as 11 a.m., and surely this would be a small service, because nobody would come as early as 11 a.m., and we have a traffic jam happening on Jordan Creek Parkway on 11 a.m. on Christmas Eve, so Hope, you are an incredible church. And what amazes me is not just all the people that show up, which is amazing. When you think about it, think about all of the things that compete for our time. It's a busy time of the year, isn't it? There's a lot of things that you need to do to order and to reorder and to organize your schedule, your family. But you're here, right here. Right now. And you're here for a reason. We're all here for the same reason. Whether this is your very first time that you've ever not only been in this place, but been in a church, or maybe you haven't been in a church for so long and there is a part of you that wonders why on earth you'd be right here right now. It's because it's time. It's what this season is all about. It's what this day is all about. There's a lot of things we celebrate, and there's a lot of things we mark, and there's a lot of traditions that we hold. That's why we bring people like John Cheatham back, where he gets to share his gifts. And we have people like Keith that's drawing for us. And if you've ever seen Keith do his pencil drawing, it is incredible. He's an artist beyond all artists. It's incredible. And you'll want to see his creation at the end of the service today. We have people like Matt Baird coming and sharing his gifts, where he's singing a song by Jesus Jones, who... this band that existed in the UK in the late 80s, the early 90s. And I was joking with Matt just a couple nights ago. Matt is the lead singer of a metal band. I mean, an incredible metal band. But if you've ever heard Matt with his band Spoken, and if you haven't heard his band Spoken, you should hear his band Spoken. But he sings while screaming. I didn't know it was possible. I didn't know you could do that. When I scream, I just scream, and usually it's because I'm scared, but Matt can scream and sing at the same time, and it's incredible. And I asked him, I said, did you ever imagine, Matt and I are the same age, we're both 25, and I said, did you ever met that song right here, right now, came out in the late 80s, early 90s. It was when we were freshmen in high school. So it said, young Matt Baird, who loved hard rock, did he ever dream that he would be singing at a church a pop song from the late 80s, early 90s? And he said, absolutely not. But I'll do anything for Jesus. Do anything to be able to share the truth of the gospel. The truth that hits us at just the right time. It's what Mike Edwards, the lead singer for Jesus Jones, was writing that song about. It was at the fall of the Iron Curtain, a UK-based band, and he was writing a song that was inspired about events that were going to transform the world in which they lived. That there was a block of countries that were under the control of people who didn't have their freedom or their best interest in mind. And people had gone for a generation without the ability to experience freedom and the thought and the idea that at some point that oppression, that control, that would ever end. It was unthinkable. It was unimaginable. But it started to happen. It says, I was alive and I was waiting. I was alive and I was waiting for this right here, right now. And there's no other place I'd rather be. When we experience transformation, it's incredible, isn't it? That moment when the light bulb comes on, that moment when the whole reality that we've experienced, when it just starts to change, or maybe the darkness that's been a part of our lives, that curtain starts to be raised, and all of a sudden we can see light that's poking through underneath of that curtain. We think to ourselves, maybe, just maybe, it's not going to be like this forever. And we're on the precipice. We're on the edge of something that's so incredible. We know that it's time. It's what that movie montage was all about. Think about your favorite movies. Think about the movies that stay with you the longest, the movies that you continue to talk about on the way home from the theater. Whether they're comedy or whether they're drama or whether they're anything in between. So many of them reach this climactic moment, this time, this pivotal moment where everything changes. You couldn't imagine, you couldn't dream that would ever happen, but somehow when that event occurred, well, the future was transformed. Not only do we see those moments in movies or see them throughout the course of history, but we have those moments in our own lives, don't we? I remember my second year of teaching, I taught high school English out of college. My first 2 years out of college, I was a high school English teacher, and I taught so I could coach. I loved baseball. I love baseball, and so I wanted to work with young people and do that. So my second year of teaching at semester time, second semester started, and there was a new teacher in our school. And the minute this new teacher came into our school, and she actually was in our department, our English department. And that first day she walked through the doors, I was like, oh my goodness. I had a conversation with her. I was so nervous, my hands were sweating. I said, hi, I'm Jeremy, and I didn't even ask what her name was. I got off on the right foot for sure. And she said, hi, my name's Bridget. And I kid you not, I remember that afternoon, I called my mom when I got home from school. Maybe that's why I was single, because I was in my mid-20s and I was calling my mom after school to tell her that I had met a girl. But there was something about that girl that had gotten a hold of me. I told my mom, I met the kind of girl that I'm going to marry. 6.5 years. I mean, in the back of my mind, I never could forget her. At the end of that school year, we both went our separate ways. We never dated, never even really talked about dating. It wasn't the right time. But 6.5 years later, we kept in loose contact. An extra ticket to a concert that I was going to go to, and we were on the phone and said, hey, you know, if you're not doing anything, why don't you come down to Minneapolis? I was living there because I was in seminary. Why don't you come down to Minneapolis and we can go to the show together? She said yes. I'll never forget it. June 22nd, 2008. Remember, she was driving a Jeep Black Cherokee. She pulled up outside of my apartment, and I remember I could look out on the street from the window where my apartment was. I remember watching her car pull up. From the moment she walked out, I don't know what was different that time, but it was one of those pivotal moments where my life changed. Her life changed. My life for the better, her for a little bit for the worse. No, I'm just kidding. And some of those stories about time like that are really fun to tell, but some of them aren't so easy, are they? What time is it for you? What brought you here today? Whether you came out of great joy and excitement or whether you came kicking and screaming. It's in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 6. It's a letter that a guy by the name of Paul is writing to a young man, a young man by the name of Timothy. We know it as a book of the Bible, but really in its inception was really just a letter of encouragement, a letter of reminding this young man, Timothy, of what truly was important in life and what truly was the foundational thing that needed to be held on to in order to find direction and in order to find the life that God had created him for. And he said this to Timothy. He said, this is the message of Jesus Christ. This is the message of a God who would come into the world at just the right time. This is the message, Paul says, that you need to hold on to, that will transform your life in a way that nothing else could. Oh, Timothy, there are so many things in life that we can turn to try to find life and significance and importance and value. Some of them are a pursuit that's endless, like chasing our tails, catching the wind. Paul says, Timothy, this is the message that God gave to the world at just the right time. And the Bible talks about time in two different ways. It's two words in the Greek and the New Testament, the language of the New Testament that describe time. One is chronos. Everybody say chronos. Chronos is chronological time. That's where we get the word chronological. It's sequential. It's how we order our days. It's how we order our weeks. It's how we order our months. It's how we ordered all of the things that needed to happen to celebrate Christmas at your own house, to say, this person's going to come at this time, and then this is going to happen at this time, and then we're going to eat supper, and then we're going to open presents, and all the kids are saying, can't we rearrange the sequential time just a little bit? I mean, we opened a present at 9 o'clock last night and 7 o'clock this morning. Because I can't say no. But that's not the word for time that Paul's using. He's using a much deeper word for time. A much more poignant, powerful, significant. The word's kairos. Say kairos. Kairos means God's time. Appointed time. Supreme time. The time where breakthrough happens when we least expect it. When God's truth and God's life and God's love and the reality of the life that God would have for us breaks through in times where we couldn't have imagined or dreamed or predicted it would ever happen. So Paul says that in God's kairos, in God's time, he sent his son, Jesus Christ, born in the most humbly of ways. He sent him into the world as a baby, in a manger, break through into the world that people's lives would never be the same. God, you say, Jeremy, I get it. I know the story. I hear the story all the time. I mean, even if you're unfamiliar with church and with faith, you know the way the story plays out. There are two young people, Mary and Joseph. And Mary and Joseph had been engaged to be married. And Mary and Joseph had been engaged to be married, but Mary had an incredible confession that she needed to make to Joseph. I mean, sometimes I think we look at the story of Christmas and we kind of lose the radical aspect of it because it's become so familiar to us. But think about everything that Mary and Joseph had to go through. I mean, they're a young couple. An incredibly young couple. They're two teenagers who've been dealt a hand that the most mature person probably couldn't have been able to handle. When Mary comes to Joseph and she says, Joseph, I need to tell you that I've become pregnant. They'd never been together. I mean, you imagine what Joseph must have been thinking to himself. I mean, she said that she had a vision from God. She said that an angel had appeared to her, but what kind of a fool is she making me out to be? But not too long after that, Joseph himself has a dream and a vision. And in that vision, God says the exact same thing, word for word. And even though Mary and Joseph knew that God was doing something incredible in their life, that Mary and Joseph were having this kairos moment where God was breaking through in a way that, well, not only was going to change their lives forever, but was going to change our lives as well. Mary and Joseph get to Bethlehem and there's just no place for them. And all of the twists and the turns that their story had already taken, this last one must have seemed to be the one it would push them over the top to the dream for their child. Any of you who are parents know the dreams that you have for your children, don't you? That before that child is even born, you start to imagine and you start to think and dream about who they are and who they could be. And but here they are in that defining moment in their lives, and they're in a stable. And this wasn't happening the way that it was supposed to happen. But we know that. I mean, I wonder if we were to take a poll with one another this morning, how many of us can very easily point to situations in our own lives to say, you know what? If I would have had my choice, and if it would have gone my way, I would have done it differently. Just this last October, there was a group of neighbors on our street that, it's a really incredible neighborhood. It's a group of families who started off all as really casual acquaintances, trying to figure each other out, like, who's the weird neighbor on the block? They decided it was us, and we're cool with that. But what started out as very casual acquaintances quickly changed into deep, deep friendships. Friendships where you can share everything that's going on in your lives. You need that. That's why coming to church is so important, to be community. That's why next year we're focusing, all of 2017, we're focusing on this theme, to know and to be known, that there's nothing more essential in our lives, to know and to be known by God, and to know and to be known by one another. That's what we have in our neighborhood. We'd always talk about how amazing it was that God would bring us together this way. It was at the end of October, and one of the families, this great family, Brandon and Megan, they had a little daughter. Her name is Livia. Olivia is her name. She's about 2 years old, and she had the stomach flu, and Megan sent a text message out to all of the other moms and kind of as a warning, saying, you know, Livia has the stomach flu. Get ready, because all of our kids have been playing together. Next day, another text message comes out. But this one's different. They decided now that they were going to take her from home and that maybe she needed to be seen. So they took her just to a walk-in, to an urgent care. And at worst, maybe they would give her some anti-nausea medication and maybe give her a bag of fluid to help with the dehydration. But it didn't go that way for Brandon, for Megan, for Livy, and their other daughter, Addie. What they thought would be a really quick stop in urgent care ended up being a trip to Blank Children's Hospital. So Megan started to fill in all the women in the neighborhood of updates of what was going on. The scariest thing that happened was that the doctors couldn't figure it out. And I remember the experience that we had as neighbors and as friends, and just how scared we were. We thought, what's going to happen? I mean, every update that we received, it seemed like things were going from bad to worse. It was October 23rd. Megan sent out an update, and I remember Bridget and I were sitting in our living room. And we were overwhelmed because of our love for our friends, but also our fear as parents. I sent a text message to Brandon and Megan, and I said, you know, number one, I'm your friend and I'm your neighbor. That's never going to change. But I said, I'm also a pastor. And I know that you guys have an incredible church, an incredible faith community, because they do. But I said, I can't take that hat off. And if you ever would like me to come and pray, I would love to be able to come and pray for you. And the next morning, the message came, come. So I went down to the hospital, and I remember sitting with them. I'll never forget it. They were on the couch, and I was sitting in the chair right next to Livy's bed. And I remember looking at them just saying, my goodness. How are you guys doing? How are you doing this? And their answer was surprising. As both of them said, if it wasn't for faith, if it wasn't for Jesus, we'd have nothing else to hold on to. See, that's the message of Christmas. Because we all know what it feels like to be in that situation where there's nothing else that we have to hold on to that's going to give us any sense of order or certainty or assurance that the circumstances that we find ourselves are going to be okay. But God says, I've sent my son into the world at just the right time for this Kairos moment that God would break through into your lives so that you would know that even though it feels like all of the pieces have fallen apart, that all is going to be well. If you listen, you can hear the beautiful voices proclaim the message of the gospel. Open your ears, you'll hear it.
sing only, sing only, hallelujah. All is well, all is well. Lift up your voice and sing.
See, that's the story of Christmas. That's the story of that baby in the manger. That's the story of Mary and Joseph. That's the story of God's light breaking into the darkness, that the darkness doesn't have anything that could ever compete with the light that comes through Jesus Christ, our Savior and our Lord. But you say, Jeremy, that's good. That's good for Mary and Joseph. That's good for Megan and Brandon, who are sitting right over here. They're not out of the woods yet. Please pray for this family. Pray for all those people you know who need God's healing touch. So that's great for them. But that isn't my life. See, that's not the thing that has guided my life. I don't have that faith. See, faith is the thing that's been the most difficult thing in the world for me. If you knew who I was and you knew what I have done, you knew all of the things that have gone on in my life, you knew the doubts and the skepticism and even the animosity that I have towards God, you would never say that anything could be well for me if it comes to God and His plan and His purposes. Look at the story. It wasn't just Mary and Joseph that had a Kairos moment that evening. There were shepherds too. There were shepherds that were in their fields watching their flocks by night. Oh, we have a way of romanticizing who the shepherds are and what the shepherds were like. We think the shepherds are loving and really tame and docile people. That wasn't the shepherds. Shepherds were thieves. The shepherds, they were robbers. The shepherds lived by a different code of ethics, by a different moral standard than anybody else. You would never want to come across a shepherd. See, there's a reason why David would say that even though he walked through the valley of the shadow of death, because it was in the valleys. It was in the valleys that people were susceptible to people like shepherds. When you think, I mean, this is where the story gets radical. This is where the story sometimes can get a little controversial, because sometimes I think we have a preconceived notion of the box in which God can operate in, the box in which God lives in and moves in. But this story, the Christmas story, it shatters everything that we've ever known. It shatters all of the ways in which we try to put people into the places that we think that they should be. mean, you think about the last person in your life. Think about the person and the people that you despise more than anybody else. And you say, that's good, Jeremy, that's good, that's great, but God could never love. I mean, fill in the blank. Who's the blank for you? It's the shepherds. I mean, the story of God gets a lot bigger. I mean, if we were to think about the shepherds in today's world, shepherds would be more like a street gang. The shepherds would be more like that motorcycle gang that when you're going down I-80 and they pass by you, you can't hear. The rumble actually takes your hearing away. If you listen, you can almost hear the thunder of their engines where the shepherds break through. Ways you can't imagine. Hey guys, welcome to church. I was going to try out to be a shepherd this year, and I went to go try on a vest like that, and they wouldn't let me try it on. They say, you'd ruin the vest, my friend. The story just got bigger, didn't it? It's because the story is for all of you. It's the message the shepherds received from the heavenly hosts that evening as they were out in the darkness, that a light would shine in the darkness of their lives that says, I've come to give you good news of great joy that will be for all people. Not for the people that you associate with, and not for the people you think that deserve it, or not for the people that fit into your preconceived notion of where God can move and God can act. That this message of good news is for great joy for all people. For unto us this day in the city of David, a Savior has been born, who is Christ the Lord, who has come to shine his light in the darkness, who has come to bring his light to give us freedom, to give us hope, to give us identity, to give us a new moment, a new time in our lives where everything will be different. I mean, this is the way Paul writes it in Galatians chapter 4. He says, but when it was just the right time, at just the right time, God sent his son into the world. It's time. It's time for you. It's time for all of us. No matter what's been going on and no matter what's happened, no matter if you feel like your life has kind of fallen off the rails and all of the plans that you had and all the chronos things that you have put in place in your life, that those have been shattered, it's time God can put all of those pieces back. And even if you feel you're the last person that God could love, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son that anybody who believes in him wouldn't perish. Anybody. Not those who deserve it, not those who do the right things, but anybody. John writes in 1 John chapter 4, says, see how much God loved us. See the radical nature of God's love. See the boundless compassion that our God has for us. Because he sent his one and only Son into the world. That the moment we celebrate this Christmas Eve, the moment of Jesus' birth, that everything in this child's life would point to the cross, where he would give his life, that God would pour his life out so we would find ours. It's time. God is on the move. God has called you into this story, not to be a passive observer, but to be a recipient, to receive his love, say, well, how do I do that? How does that look possible? I mean, tell me the things that I need to do. Tell me the things that I need to be able to light a candle with. Give me the steps, Jeremy, you say. Well, that's the cool thing about the story. You don't need to do anything because God's already done it. That this gift has been given to you freely. It's called grace. Psalm 46, verse 10 says, be still. Get your candles out. Be still and know. Stop trying so hard. There's nothing you can do to make God love you anymore. So stop trying so hard. There's nothing you can do to make God love you any less. So quit trying so hard. Be still. Hear the promise that comes from that manger, from that stable. Be still. Receive God's light. Receive His life.
Still, 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 His bright eyes softly close, and Mary breathless draws Him sleeping to her.
Yeah.